Welcome back to the podcast and the video, depending which source you're actually listening or viewing. So today I had the great pleasure of speaking to Penny Power, OBE. She's known for building eCademy, which is the precursor to LinkedIn, the first social media network for business back in 1998, with a global membership of over 650,000 people, her and her husband Thomas. In 2014, Penny received an OBE for services to business. Penny is a role model for entrepreneurship. But in this interview, we talk about being sensitive, being enough, and the money monster. I know you're going to love this interview. Penny's a great friend, and let's go over to it. Penny Power, welcome to the video and the podcast, because we're going to split this down. Great to see you, my friend. Great to see you. So tell me, in a world which is still quite patriarchal, sadly, and a lot of women who are top executives in this playing field, or whatever you call it, and they're having to be more yang, which is stepping over to the more male energy, you decided to come out and be more sensitive. Explain that.
That's very funny. Hi. Very funny to use the term you came out. It was like,
yes, it did. Yeah. I'm sensitive now.
Do you know, Simon, it's really interesting, because the interesting thing is the perception. So I've been online since 1998, properly, when we built eCademy. And I would say that I've always been like that. I'm just wondering if the world's just noticing it more. But in 2001, I wrote a blog called Emotional Wealth Leads to Financial Wealth. And I've always beaten the drum of the importance of being ourselves. My first speech, paid speech, was BT, Women's Network. It was in something like 1999, 2000. I was terrified because they wanted me to talk about this subject of being yourself. And of course, now this is a big theme, and whether it's a marketing meme or, you know, the reality of what we need to do for our own mental health, I've always been that. It's interesting to me you use the word sensitive, because all my life, my mum, bless her, she's no longer with us, but always said, Penny, you're too sensitive. And my first boss, when I was 19, when I joined the IT industry, said, well, I don't know how well you're going to do in business. You're very emotional. Mm. I don't think I have the intellectual intelligence to be anything other than that, because I'd have to be acting. So it's been more about getting to a place in my life where it's not destructive to be who I am, because I've molded my life in a way where that's accepted. Yeah. And so it is. I remember Hannah, my daughter, who's now 29, first time she saw me do a speech, I think she was about 10. She said, Mummy, you're no different to being in the kitchen with you when you do your talk. And so I loved that. And I always remember thinking, yay, that's good news. So
brilliant.
I haven't got the capacity to be more sensitive, to be any less sensitive than I am. I am one of those people.
I think it's hugely powerful. I mean, Brené Brown talks about the power of a vulnerability. And I think some people think they take it too far, and it's like, well, it's not about crying, and it's an element of that.
It's not about sharing all your pain. Yeah.
But it's not about sharing everything. It's not about sharing your dirty linen.
Very fine balance for people who don't quite get it, and I think it's like a lot of talents that people have, or communication skills. Some people just get it and some people don't. I think it's really critical to understand that one's vulnerability doesn't affect your credibility.
Yeah. And I would say, if you've gone through some turmoil or some chaos, when you've come out the other side, then share the experience and say, this is what happened. Wow. This is what I've learned from it. So you're imparting wisdom rather than being there and posting like, oh, I've got a hurty finger, or, I'm being silly.
The danger is, when you do that, and I've seen that happen to a lot of people, is you get a lot of advice, and in a way you might feel it's unsolicited, but actually you have reached out and asked for it. Therefore it's a dangerous thing to do, because you've got to be in the right place to get advice. And sometimes people will share their vulnerability and then really regret it. I had somebody recently say to me, what should I do about this post? I've shared some realities and it's really annoying me, all of the replies I'm getting. And you mentioned Brené Brown. I mean, she's great. She's been able to articulate in books and get on the speaking circuit in a way that I never was able to. My daughter laughs about me, because there's always a bit of a lump in my throat or gritting my teeth when I say it, because there's so much what she says I've just always believed in. And And I think we are now in a world of desiring trust and honesty so much that unless we share our whole self, it's very difficult for people to really know. She says it brilliantly, Brené Brown. She says, what you are matters, but who you are matters more. I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is true. It's because anyone can put a website up and you can put a picture. And let's be honest, viewers, how many of you listening to this and watching to this have a photo, which is probably 20 years old and heavily retouched? You know, it's not you anymore. So doing videos, things like this, you coming on here, it's you, you know, it's
me.
You know, there's no filters. It is brilliant. So tell me also about being enough.
Well, I think that's very interesting. I think it's about being enough for yourself. Really, I think a lot of people think it's, am I enough for you, Simon? Am I being enough on this show for people?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
You know, am I being enough? But I think if you come from that place, it's very hard. I think it starts with the internal validation of, well, I actually feel like, you know, I am enough. I mean, God, we're always having to have that growth mindset, but I'm meaning in my core strengths and vulnerabilities and whatever the talent is that I have to the world, I have to accept that I can't be someone else. And I do remember a chasm that I crossed on that quite clearly. Mm. And that was when I first started Academy back in 1998. And that was the first social network in the world, for anybody that's not heard of it.
Yeah,
no longer exists, but you can Google it.
650,000 members you had all around the world? Yeah,
650,000, yeah. So we started it before LinkedIn. It was 4 years before LinkedIn, 6 years before Facebook. So it was the first social network in the world for business. And but I remember I was at the school gate collecting Hannah. So I had three children under five, and I didn't plan to be a global entrepreneur and go on the path that it ended up taking us on, along with the risks and stuff that happened as a result of it. But I was at the school gate collecting Hannah, and you know, any mum and dad will know that's quite a special moment. But a very important phone call came in just as I was standing waiting for her to come out of her classroom in the playground. And it's lovely. The kids run towards you with their Biff and Chip books and it's all very special. But I had to take this call and it was really noisy. And I said to this person, I just found myself saying, it wasn't rehearsed, sorry, I'm at Waterloo Station about to get a train. Can I call you back?
Right.
And they said, yeah, of course. And put the phone down and then huddled Hannah and all very exciting. Got in the car, and then I felt this horrible sense of deceit, not only to the person that I'd said that to, because I'm not a liar,
yeah,
but also to my daughter and to who I was at that stage in my life. And and I remember the moment I was passing the end of a road that had the stables on it, and I pass it regularly, and I just remember that moment where I was quite disgusted by myself, that I felt I needed to be that person.
Yeah.
And so I vowed to myself that I had to create a life around me and design a life around me and lead a life around me that allowed me to be the whole me and not have any of that pretend, which meant I had to, you know, it's not easy. You have to design something. It took me years to really understand that.
Yeah.
You design something that completely under you, that you are right inside.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's also when you put out into the world this fake kind of image that you're standing at Waterloo or whatever, you also attract that back in. And you will attract the fakers and the clients who are a pain in the backside and don't pay and blah, blah, blah. But when you come from when you step into your own power and you're confident with it, and this is who I am, the world will really reward you. They'll step up and go, brilliant. And you'll get that back. And it's beautiful. I mean, we've been connected on Facebook for years. But some of the stuff you put out there, it's genuine and it's great.
Do you know, it's lovely that you say that, but also I never...
It's all rehearsed, don't worry, yeah.
I never really think about what I'm going to put out there. I have never used a scheduling software. I have never pre-written a post.
Yeah.
I literally was sitting at my desk. I'll come off a call with a client or something will have triggered me on a thought and that's what will go up. Now we put out some posts like you do about your podcast, and obviously those are pre-done because you know that you're putting out. But anything, it literally does come from the heart. And I think when I touch my keyboard, I have to remember there's people at the end of it, not technology. And it literally comes from the heart, whatever I'm saying.
When you do that, because I used to put a video out from my own business, I used to put out a video every week. But now, I mean, I haven't put out a video for ages now, only when... very similar strain as you, when I'll off the call from a client or whatever and something will come up and think, I need to record that. I need to put that out. And every time, so my question to you is, when you do that, do you always get someone that says, I really need to hear that today?
Yeah, absolutely, because you're resonating, aren't you?
Yeah.
Your words, yeah. You know, I don't think, I never, ever, ever, and no, and people will not believe it, but I never, ever go online looking for a transaction.
Yeah.
Or an outcome, because that sets me up for a fall to start with. So maybe I'm not brave enough, but also it's just not the way I have ever seen this social media world. I've never seen it like that.
Yeah.
And we actually have tested some things over the years of plowing money into all sorts of Facebook adverts, and it just doesn't work. What seems to work is when I resonate with somebody on a post, or, you know, kind enough to be on a podcast like this. And people just, it's, to me, the internet is just like being in my local pub. And
you get the drunks on internet.
No. Yes. But it is, or my local cafe. It's to me, it's not somewhere where I am seeking. And I think there's so much of the mental health problems and stress in business comes from that desire for outcomes all the time, from every human interaction that people are making.
Completely agree.
And I just love people.
Yeah.
I genuinely do. I love that.
And I get that from you, you know, having followed me for so long.
So I think that's possibly why it will resonate, and you get somebody saying, I understand that. I have learned that I can, if I, you know, people don't want to be sold to, but they do love having their problems solved.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I am dedicated to and have been really all my life, but it became formalized when I started the academy and now in what we're doing as well, is I like people to know that they matter.
Yeah.
And that is a really big human need. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's very critical that people, we have that sense of belonging. So, you know, for anybody, Maslow is a brilliant man who wrote a book, I think in the 19th century or maybe early 20th century. And it's a pyramid they talk about. And the first thing is, you know, have I got my physical needs? Then it's my need for safety.
Yeah.
Need for belonging. And then once you have that, your self-esteem, and then you can be the best you can be at the top of the pyramid, self-actualization. And I really am committed to that belonging piece. And whether somebody just reads a post from me and says, I have a sense of belonging to that emotion, or they join our communities and say, I have a sense of belonging to those people because they are resonating a similar vibe to me.
Yeah.
That is what I want to do for people. And I've got a huge amount of clarity about that, because I think we have become the most connected generation ever, but we are so deeply disconnected. But with the lack of love that we feel online, for example, is affecting people's
health. It's so transient online, I think. There's no depth to it.
There isn't.
Yeah.
And there's massive loneliness, Simon. I mean, we've got a business health check thing that people can take, and it gives them a report on areas of their business. And it's free. And so a lot of people take it. So about 1,200 people have now taken it. And consistently pre-COVID and now, consistently over 67% is the lowest I've ever had in a month say I am lonely in business.
Wow.
And loneliness, what drives me about it in the business world is that it has an economic impact on you as an individual when you're lonely, because it'll affect your self-worth, your self-esteem, it'll affect the way that you manage to innovate, it'll affect your ability to really understand others. It affects how you innovate business models, you know, everything. If you're connected to people who want the best for you, that big belonging piece will help you to then raise your self-esteem and your self-worth, and you'll be more successful. So that's very important to me when I write my content.
Yeah, definitely. So you're absolutely right. And it's that connection. And when, with the IAB, we started up the coffee mornings, and that people really felt there was a sense of belonging, and they really looked forward to each. We used to do it every week, and now it's down to once a month. But it's to be part of something, because so many people, they are working from their back bedroom, especially after COVID, you know, horrible thing. So look, I want to talk about your book, which is called Business is Personal, Be the Leader of Your Life and Business. So tell me more about this.
Well, I had a, so after Academy in 2012 came to a really painful end, and Thomas and I had ploughed 14 years into it and, you know, had really had the roller coaster of having a global, very high profile brand, both personal and business. We were then in the wilderness, and Thomas got some non-exec roles and a few bits and pieces going on. And I started a couple of other businesses, one after another. I had not properly understood my emotions and handled with them, not only the stress of those 14 years, which I actually write about it, called Being Broken in my book, Chapter 2. Yeah. And I do it only for people to be able to relate to it and learn from it. And then I started another business, and I was doing a crowdfund, and a troll from our past came back into that platform, Crowdcube, and Crowdcube didn't do anything about it, unfortunately, and it was pretty horrible. And the next day I was presenting to a group of people about how to build their brand online, and I had what's called, was diagnosed as a hallucinogenic panic attack. And this is a panic attack that's so high that it's actually the brain chemicals in your brain. And I'd never had a breathless panic attack. I've never had anything like that. I was very aware that not only was my business life stressful, but we'd had some really big traumas in our family of young deaths, my brother, my niece, my mother's dementia, and also trauma that of our daughter, which she openly talks about, when she was abducted by three men and raped by one of them. So I had been the sort of managing all of that whilst trying to pay down this enormous debt that we had created from having Academy. So obviously it was there, but it was just lying dormant, and it just needed that trigger, and that troll was a trigger, and it brought that through. So as a result of that, I decided to take a bit of self-care, which I'd always believed that anybody that had time for self-care wasn't as ambitious as me and wasn't as busy as me and wasn't as productive as me, and all these sort of terrible judgments. And I went to a psychologist called Dr. Anna Collins, who was absolutely brilliant. And it was just so illuminating, because there were some such obvious things about my character that I should have been aware of, where I was in conflict. The way I was living my life was in conflict with where I got my peace and contentment. And it was just very interesting. So after about five or six sessions, I had really started just being in the room with a psychologist and interrogating her on lots of aspects of being a business owner. Became very interesting to me, because I felt like there were 5 million business owners should have been in the room with me.
Yeah.
Particularly what I would call myself as an accidental entrepreneur, somebody who builds a business that wants to have impact and is very caring and supportive to others, but doesn't really understand necessarily how the business world and how that behaves. And so, you know, I didn't have the resilience to it, although I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wrote my book. And I've always believed that business is personal, right back to when I was 19 and got my first job with that, you know, and I did have an impact in the IT industry and had a huge career in it until I was 28 and left to have Hannah and then build Academy. So I've always believed it. It's a philosophy that, you know, when somebody said to me, Penny, I don't have to like you, it's just business, it's not personal, I thought, wait a minute. That's not my bag. I need to like and respect people and have similar values to people.
Yeah. Well, it's the three things. Do I like you? Do I trust you? Do I know you? Do I like you? Do I trust you? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you buy an emotion. We buy from people. So, you know, there has to be that kind of emotional connection. You know, when was the last time you and Thomas said, hey, let's go out and be sold to? No, you buy on emotion.
Absolutely.
Because it feels a need. You know, am I hungry? Am I in pain? Or do I want to get there faster? Or do I want to have more luxury? Whatever it is, it's for you. It's your own, you know, your hot and hot.
It moment. Is, but not all absolutely. Personality types understand that, because we all know that you can sort of split people a little bit between, are they people orientated or are they task orientated? So if we look at the sort of the world of finance, accounting, lawyers, web guys and girls, you know, they tend to be much more tasky people. They're not necessarily as comfortable in that world of communication. So it's not difficult to see how the online world has ended up getting completely savaged by people who want to automate everything and be at a distance from people. And I just think that's just catastrophic, really.
Well, going back to the coffee mornings before, you know, that was Janet and Sarah. Hello, Janet. I don't know if you're watching this, you know, they were very much behind the scenes, but it's wonderful when the people, the board, step forward and say, this is us. And the members have all gone, wow. And they feel there's a connection. And when you have that connection, it's more loyalty, you breed more trust, and that just permeates throughout it all. And the member engagement is really increased, and it's lovely.
I bet it is. I remember Hannah, who has coached me a lot, my daughter, on stuff, and she said, Mum, just stop being a businesswoman and just be a community builder, because that's what I love doing.
And that's just
an extension of being a mum to me, creating a family with the values of love inside it. So I'm sure it must be fantastic. But, you know, people have to learn how to be a citizen of those places. You have to learn how to manage a community, but you also have to learn how to be a citizen in those places, because it can often feel very alien now. You know, when I look, when Farnham, we used to have a wine bar in Farnham called Sevens. This is years ago, like 15, 20 years ago. And everybody after work would pile in there in the evening on a Friday. And that's where majority of business was done. Mm. And, you know, that whole thing has become very alien to us now. Business isn't done on the golf course in the same way. It's just, we've just got to get back to that world. And so it's lovely that you're doing that with your, what were they called, Jane and?
No, Sarah and Janet.
Sarah and Janet.
Janet's the COO, CEO, and Sarah's the COO.
Brilliant. And we have to, you know, when we create, we've got a community called BIP 100, which is Businesses Personal 100, and it's for our business experts and for us to nurture them and for them to nurture one another. And it's, you've set the culture of that community, but then it's about people feeling, actually, I've got permission to really be myself here. Yeah. And for us, we want to measure their emotional well-being, not just their financial well-being as a result of being in it.
And talking of finances, in the book, you talk about the money monster.
Yes.
I'd just be interested, because obviously with the IB is all about finances and an account. Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well, Thomas and I took enormous risks with the Academy. At the beginning, it was like, my God, this can't be real, because I remember it. And when I started the idea, it was literally, Thomas, there's MySpace and Friends Reunited. Can't we create a little community for some business owners? Yeah. Oh, yeah, Penn, that's a good idea. He had his own business. I was still breastfeeding my third child. And, you know, it was just an idea to, I found somebody who said, yeah, I can build you something like that. But they'd never built a community before. Nobody really had. There'd been some.
What a project to take on.
I know. There would have been Yahoo groups and things like that for anybody as old as that can remember it. But and then somebody very quickly contacted me and said they wanted to invest, and they wanted to put £250,000 into it. And then they became a 50% shareholder. And then our nightmare started, because very quickly they wanted to float it on the stock market. So within 18 months, Thomas and I were worth £22 million on paper. Wow. And suddenly the happy little content life we had was looking small compared to what the potential of our life could be. But that actually wasn't what was driving us anyway. The dot-com bust happened and it didn't go out. And then really from 2000, our financial hell started all the way through to 2012, because we had this responsibility for people that loved this home we'd created, but funding it was ridiculously hard. And we had some false starts. Barclays were going to buy us at one point after the, you know, but that happened during the banking crisis, then flared up. And then the day they were going to sign the contract, literally, we were on the 33rd floor of the Canary Wharf with them. They said, no, we can't, because Bob Diamond is on the front of every newspaper as being a bad guy. Yeah, see you at Barclays. Anyway, there were lots of moments like that, which I won't go into a lot of detail. And it resulted in us having 152 credit cards that we had personally taken out.
There were that many credit cards around.
I know, it's amazing. To keep the business going. And anyway, when it did go, you know, we had a lot of debt at the end of that. And I created a monster spreadsheet, and it was my money monster. And what I learned from it is we had personally gone into debt in order to grow a business, and that we hadn't really had the boundaries around us and our business. And a lot of people do that. They put Band-Aid on a business in order to keep it going. Yeah. And you don't really get the right picture of what's going on. And so part of my journey from starting Academy was Thomas ended up having to come in, because when we were floating the business on the stock market, he was forced to bring his business in. Part of my journey we brought in a CEO. I never really got that involved in financial matters, not at home and not in business. I was busy enough. And then I just vowed to myself, I had to really up my game about understanding it. So I got rid of somebody who was looking after our accounts and had been used to having complete control. And I embedded Xero and then brought on a beautiful bookkeeper into my life. And I had the empowerment of seeing everything rather than not, and being connected to it with this bookkeeper working side by side. And one by one, we earned enough money to pay off these credit cards, until about 4.5 years ago, we were able to burn that spreadsheet literally with a glass of champagne and say, we've done it. You know, we're back to zero now.
So would you say, because this is something we talk about, you know, they're never just a bookkeeper. They're a business advisor. They help people see the future of what's possible. So many things. So essentially that bookkeeper saved you mentally, financially, everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really critical relationship, because I cannot believe how complex it is to run even a tiny business when you think of the provisioning you need to do for the various taxes, the PAYE, the VAT, the corporation tax, etc. And just understanding the disciplines and having somebody to talk things over with, and how do I categorize things, and it is a skill. It's a skill. And what I always say is that we have our primary skill in business, and whatever it is, you know, it could be a graphic designer, you could be a podcast host, you could be a community builder like I am. But all the secondary skills that you need in business are really the things that are going to make or break you.
What is it? The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. He talks about, you know, splitting the business, and you have a creative idea. It might be knitting elf socks.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But then he's realized, oh, well, I've got to be a technician. I've got to be the marketing. I've got to be sales. I've got to be all these different things. And you actually, your passion is just sitting there knitting. Absolutely. Suddenly you're pulled in this way and the passion just dies, and you just think, hate it. So get people.
And I mean, it's not expensive to have a bookkeeper by your side, you know, relative to how you probably charge your own time out and to the errors that you could make. So,
and what's it worth to your mental health as well?
Absolutely, Simon. I mean, that's probably should be at the top of why you should do it.
Love it. I can see Jesus bookkeeping save you. I love it.
Absolutely.
So look, three last questions. I really appreciate your time, Penny. I know you've got a busy schedule. Tell me something not many people know about you.
Well, it's not very exciting. The first thing that came to my mind was that I was a swimmer. That was my thing. And actually, it's quite nice. Sharon Davis, I always thought I'd be in the Olympics, and I never was that good, but Sharon Davis was my real hero. And recently I was asked to do a foreword for a book, and Sharon Davis was also asked to do the foreword for it. And Thomas... Mm-hmm. We got the book arrived and our names are side by side. And Thomas said, there you go. You are swimming in the lane with her now.
Brilliant. Love it. That's fantastic. Excellent. Okay. So the penultimate question, you're lying in deathbed, a bit morbid. Regular listeners to this will know.
I accept it.
Yeah. So, and everything you've written, everything you've created, everything's disappeared, gone forever. No one will remember it. It's all gone. So you only allowed to have one piece of advice that you can leave the planet. What would that be?
Straight off the top of my head, it's live with love, not fear.
Brilliant.
I think that's what I would always say. Yeah.
Yeah. The last guy I interviewed, actually, Andy McGee, he said, love. What did he say? Yeah. Love. Again, something to do with love. Not love. It's not growing your hair and smoking weed or whatever. It's actually... Yeah. When you come from a place of love, when you love yourself, the world will follow suit. And it's really
when you love others, you know, because everybody else's communication is often an expression of their own frustration, fears.
Brilliant. So the last one, where can people find you?
Well, that's
an address, obviously, but online.
I've got my website, pennypower.co.uk, but I mean, easy to find me on lots of the channels. I think LinkedIn is probably the easiest one that I would monitor if the message was sent through to me.
Did you go on there and go, LinkedIn again? We could have been here.
No, because it's not what we were building.
Yeah.
we didn't build, we weren't building that type of, although it's getting much kinder and it's shifting,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
But we weren't trying to. In fact, Reid Hoffman was the founder, was on Ecademy before he started LinkedIn.
Good Lord, wow. Yeah, well, so, maybe your part to play was to give him that idea. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? So
Penny, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much. It really is. It's wonderful. And we'll put all the links on and you can go on there. All your socials are on there, but also your book as well. Highly recommend people go and get it.
Thank you very much. And thank you to anyone that was listening. And I hope you enjoy being a citizen of your wonderful community.
Brilliant. Until next time, take care. Bye.